Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, it's been said that money is the root of all evil, and while I actually don't believe that's true, I do know that it can be the source of a lot of conflict in marriages. And in fact, it's kind of one of the big two things that couples either end up fighting about or say they're ending their marriages over. And just like sex, which is the other big one, it isn't, you know, sex isn't just about frequency and position. Money isn't just about dollars and cents. And you actually think it would be, but it's not. In reality, it doesn't even matter how much money a couple has, or how little, or any, or how it's spent, really, although that does come into play. But it's really, what does this mean to you? And because money, like sex, is really very personal. And that is really why it's the source of so much friction. I cannot tell you the number of times my clients will talk about his money and her money. And to be perfectly honest, in most states, money for the most part belongs to both partners. But you would not know it to hear the way some couples talk. And in fact, I've even had couples come in where the difference in salary is a source of friction, whether or not the person who stays at home and takes care of the kids is actually contributing. And it really, when you back all this stuff out, it's really, really hard for a lot of couples to talk about money. And so it begs the question, what makes it such a hot topic in so many marriages? So I've asked Elizabeth Wilson, who's a financial coach and founder of Find Your Zeros, to help me answer this question, as well as to talk about what couples can do differently so that they quit fighting about money. So Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on and bringing your expertise on this, what can be a very volatile topic for a lot of couples.
Well, thank you, Leslie, for having me on. I'm excited to be able to share a little bit about what I've learned both in my own relationship and especially through coaching couples with their finances.
So I know that, you know, right now with a lot of young people, they say that they can't get married because they can't afford it. And sometimes when people go into that, it's, well, they really can't afford the $30,000 wedding that one of them really wants to have. But there's a lot of talk about debt from, you know, college loans. And, I mean, when I got married eons ago, I realized back in the dark ages or when, you know, we were crossing the country in covered wagons, if you ask my kids. I came into the marriage with college loans. Now, they weren't outrageous, but when I married my husband, he was in graduate school, so we didn't have a whole lot of money. So is that really something that's contributing to relationship difficulties or even the question of whether couples are getting married?
You know what, I think it actually roots even deeper into the fact that people don't even know how to discuss and have those money discussions to even see if they're really compatible with one person or another. It's become a more and more taboo topic, although there are, you know, there is a lot of talk about student loan debt, but at the same time, I don't see couples sitting down and having those conversations about, well, what kind of debts do you have? What kind of debts do I have? What am I bringing to the relationship? What assets am I contributing? How do I manage my money? So much of the time it's you know, kept separate or just isn't really discussed. Everyone's just kind of handling their own money until at some point following the marriage. And even some couples opt to keep things separate for much longer than that. And so they're not having
right.
those discussions.
And that's a subject I want to get to a little bit later. But one of the things is that, you know, and I think you touched on this a little bit, and I know that I was guilty of this when I got married because I had a job and I could pay my bills, but I didn't actually think much further than that. In addition to my student loans, I also had credit card debt when I married my husband. And you know, I didn't really think that much about money. And is that something that just as a culture we don't do very well to help our young people or anybody, forget young people, anybody, figure out what's a good, you know, how do you spend your money?
Absolutely. Knowing how to manage money is not something that is entirely intuitive, and many of us are not taught in school how to balance a monthly budget, that you need to know before buying a house, or even how to plan for retirement. Those, a lot of times, are concepts that you learn through a crash course of life and through making mistakes or watching other people make mistakes. So this information is not learned by either watching your parents or having your parents teach you this kind of stuff, or you go and seek out that information on your own by picking up, you know, a personal finance self-help book, then a lot of the times you aren't going to know what you don't know. And if you follow what society tells you and use society as your teacher, you can end up in a lot of financial trouble, like you talked about with the credit cards and things like that.
Well, and that's true, because I don't really remember my parents talking about money. I do remember being told, you know, we can't afford that. But I never really understood what that meant. And I actually didn't even really question it, even though I would see, you know, all my friends' families, you know, taking vacations and doing this. And, you know, it's not something we did. And as I learned growing up, some of that was more personal choice on probably my dad's part, because he was frugal, let's put it that way, which mm-hmm. was actually, you know, in some respects was a good thing, but it's also finding, I think, that balance between, you know, because unfortunately, he was putting away a lot for when he got older and retired, and unfortunately he died before he was 55. So, I mean, and that's not to say he shouldn't have been planning for retirement, but it just kind of didn't end up that way. So what is it about money that causes such challenges for people? Because really, I mean, on some level, spending money is like eating. You know, calories in, calories out, money in, money out. If you spend more than you have, you're going to be in trouble. But why is that concept so hard for people?
It's so hard because everyone has their own money story, their own experience with money. So you mentioned, you know, that your father was frugal, and so there's a certain viewpoint that you've developed by growing up in that atmosphere. Whether it's, you know, the fact that you feel like you can't afford things because of, you know, one reason or another, or a focus on saving for the future that you've adopted from your father, or potentially even a polar opposite experience of, well, I saw what my father did, and he didn't even get to use the money he was saving, so my focus is going to be on enjoying the experiences as I can afford to do them, or something, you know, completely in between. So how money is viewed, how money is treated and experienced can vary greatly from person to person, because it's all going to depend on your upbringing, both from, you know, what was modeled to you by authority figures, but also your early money experiences, you know, once you start getting out on your own, those first jobs and things like that. And because of that, we all have different associations, various levels of attachment to money. Some people may view it as evil. Others may view it as a form of security. And then there are others that view that money is meant to just simply be enjoyed. And from those different attachments and associations, that's where we draw the emotions to our money. So everyone has emotions associated with their money. So when couples are fighting about money, a lot of times it's not about the money itself. What they're really arguing about is something deeper, such as a lack of security or a disproportionate amount of control between one partner and the other.
And that's interesting that you say that, because I remember very vividly a couple that I worked with, and she grew up, her dad was an alcoholic and would lose his job, and, you know, sometimes she'd come home and there wouldn't be food in the house, and sometimes she'd come home and there'd be an eviction notice on the door. And so she got, you know, so she was bound and determined that the man she married was going to be, you know, stable, have a stable job and be a secure individual and, you know, Monday through Friday, 8 to 6, you know. And when she married her husband, that's the kind of job that he had. And then during their marriage, he quit that very stable job and started not one but two of his own businesses. And she would freak out. And he didn't understand. He took it that she didn't believe in him. And by that time, they had three children. So all she was doing was replaying that story in her head that she didn't want to come home. You know, she didn't want her children to have that uncertain lifestyle that she had had growing up. And, you know, it took a lot for them to understand each other's stories. And, it, you know, it was a really amazing thing to sit and participate in and experience from the outside. It's like, oh, wow, because there was just a complete lack of understanding of where the other person was coming from.
Right, and that's why it's so important to kind of dig into that and to see where your partner or potential mate is coming from, because, you know, hearing that kind of story, I can see very clearly that that woman needed a sense of security. And so then you can start digging into that and, you know, having her qualify, you know, okay, what does security mean to you? How much do we need to have set aside in savings and a rainy day fund for you to feel comfortable? Because
how much is enough?
If you're fearful and vulnerable, then you're not going to be able to really participate in the relationships around you. You know, but a lot of times people, you know, when prompted, can put a dollar amount on it. They need to work through that, and they need to have the space to kind of figure that out and realize that, oh, yeah, well, I mean, I guess if we did have $15,000 in savings, that would cover all of our expenses for 6 months. So, yeah, I would feel, you know, more comfortable about that. You have to help them get past the fear to really see what it is that they're fearing.
And so, you know, that was kind of a clear relationship pattern that it wasn't clear to them while they were living it, but it became very clear. So what other kinds of relationship patterns do you see people having, both with their own, you know, both with money for themselves, but also as part of a couple?
Well, I find that with every couple, you have the spender and the saver. And while individually you may both classify yourselves as savers or spenders, but compared to the other individual, you are either going to be more of the saver side or more of the spender side. And so with that tends to come some conflict if it's not handled or viewed properly, if it's viewed as sort of a contradictory thing as opposed to complementary. But what I've found in working with couples is it's great to have a spender and a saver, because then you're going to have balance. You're going to have, well, there may be one person that's focused more on the future and on the security and the savings. You also have another person involved in the relationship who's going to keep you focused on living in the present and enjoying, you know, the fruits of your labor, because you know, we don't work from, you know, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. just so we can retire at age 55. A lot of us want to enjoy that time in between as well. And so it's helpful to have that balance and the input from both people. And there's also kind of going along with that a tendency to put the responsibility of managing the finances onto one person. And that tends to go to the saver, but sometimes it could be the spender. And that puts the pressure on one individual, and then a lot of times the other one will just kind of wash their hands of it, but then you're not able to work together on goals, and you can kind of derail one another's plan.
Well, yeah, and I think it's like anything else, especially in a marriage, that spending some time getting on the same page is well worth doing. But what is it that you find is the biggest challenge to couples being able to do that?
A lot of it is carving out that time, especially for couples that have, you know, already have families established. It's being very intentional about carving out that time to sit down together, to have monthly meetings about the budget and about the spending and about the financial goals, to really be able to tackle that, because you do need to do it together. While there can be one person that kind of oversees the day-to-day tracking of the expenses, ultimately at the end of the month and in preparation for the next month, you need to be unified and you need to both be aware of where you're standing with your goals. And so what I see is needing to encourage couples and help them build that framework for communicating together, both in a monthly meeting kind of scenario where they're sitting down at the kitchen table after they put the kids to bed. Maybe you do it with a glass of wine. That's how I entice my partner to come to our budget meetings. It's been always wine involved. And so that's just important to have those chances. And then I've also found that different couples need different ways to communicate during the month. Depending on an individual style, you may need to use some kind of tracking system so that your partner knows, you know, where the spending is at that time. So they know when they do the shopping that they have, you know, X amount that they can spend and not go over budget. So there's a bunch of different tracking tools, you know, apps and things you can use, or you can just do an old school method as well.
Well, and I think you said something really important because it brought me back to my in-laws. And, you know, my father-in-law, even though my mother-in-law would, I'm sure she wrote some, you know, paid some bills, and I know she was the one who did most of the grocery shopping, she didn't really know much about where their money was or how much they had. And when he died, I mean, this was when they were older, but she was very lost because she had never really learned. And my husband and I would get lovingly frustrated with her because, you know, she would say, oh, well, I can't do this. And it's like, of course you can. You've been doing it all along, but it's a lot of that confidence in dealing with money because I think people can get really scared of it.
Absolutely. And what you're hitting on, Leslie, is so true. And as a trend, especially with females, with women, you know, not getting involved in the finances, just letting their husband, you know, just kind of take the steering wheel, so to speak, because they're doing a great job and, you know, you feel like you're doing fine, but then something like that can happen. Or even maybe not that extreme, but maybe your husband ends up, you know, being in the hospital for a period of time and you need to be able to manage those finances. That's why it's so important to come together and know what's going on and even potentially switching off duties as far as who's going to do the budget for the next month, who's going to go online and log into the accounts and make sure the bills are paid, just so that you have that security to know that, you know, if something happened to me, that my partner is going to be okay and they're going to be able to know how to take care of themselves and take care of the finances. It's a great gift you can really give to your partner to make sure that they understand and that they feel comfortable managing the finances, even if they're not the one doing it on a day-to-day basis.
So what I hear you saying, that it's really important to approach this as a team and that you understand what's happening, what your goals are, and you've got a plan to get there.
Absolutely. You have to approach it from a team effort. So many times I'll see people classify, even after they get married, classify their debts as, oh, well, this is my debt, so my income will go to pay down this debt, and this one's your debt, so your income will go to pay down your debt. But that's crippling your debt repayment efforts by doing it that way. A lot of times you can pay off stuff so much faster if you'll just focus on one debt at a time.
Well, and I think that's a really, and I want to hold that thought for just a minute because I think that's a really important concept, but I just need to remind people that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I hope that you are enjoying this discussion with Elizabeth Wilson, love and money discussion. I think it's fascinating, but before we continue, I want to check in with you and see if you have questions about money and is it causing problems in your marriage. And if money is an issue for you and your partner, I might be able to help. Please give me a call or shoot me an email and take advantage of my free, no obligation, perfectly confidential strategy session to see how we can attack your money issues. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at Foundations Coaching NC, that's FoundationsCoachingNC coachingnc.com, or you can reach me at 919-924-0463. And now back to this discussion. Because Elizabeth, this is something that I find really interesting. I've had more couples than I can count talk about your money versus my money. And anytime I hear anybody as a married couple talking about yours and mine, unless we're discussing our underwear or our toothbrushes, I get really, I go, ah! Because it, to me, it's a mindset. And, you know, I had a couple many years ago where they were not yet married, they were engaged, and there was a financial difference in what they could afford, and she moved into his home, and she didn't, you know, and they were splitting the bills, even though she made considerably less money than he did, but they were splitting the bills 50-50. And she was getting really frustrated because she wanted to have a rug in their entry hall, but she couldn't afford it out of her money. And he didn't see the need for it, but he went out and bought a new computer, a whole new system that for his office, and it really created problems. So what is this your mind money business? How do we help couples get past that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge that a lot of couples face at one point or another in their relationship and when they're trying to join their finances. Sometimes I think it comes from a place of shame, especially in when you're talking about my debt or your debt. I know personally I was not thrilled to be having debt still and be entering into a marriage because I knew that was then going to put the obligation on my spouse as well for that debt. You know, that was something that I had to kind of deal with on my own, and luckily my partner had some debts too, so it was, it was much easier kind of coming into it to be able to then view that as mutually our debt because we were each bringing something into the relationship. But I think a lot of times there can be a piece of shame there, especially if one partner has debt while the other one does not. And, you know, that takes a lot of communication as far as the support that one is expressing to the other. But then when it comes down to where it's more like this is mine because it's better and I've worked hard for it, or kind of what you said in the very beginning, Leslie, in that more of the intro where you're talking about the differences in salaries or, not considering the stay-at-home parent to be contributing to the same level as the one that, is bringing in a physical paycheck.
Who's actually bringing in the dollars and cents. And my response is the person who's staying at home with kids is keeping money from leaving the home, but somehow that doesn't ever seem to be added in. Is not because we see what goes out. The other stuff just is kind of phantom money. It doesn't go in or out, but we don't see it as, oh, they're saving on child care or they're saving on food because, they're not having a second job.
Yes, exactly. But the way that I view it as a financial coach is at least 75% of the time, a couple's, issues with money is not so much an issue with, like, income when they can't make their, numbers work out and can't, meet their bills. A lot of times it's an expense issue. And so for me, I greatly value the couple or the individual who is opting to stay at home and provide a service for the family at a reduced cost to what you would be able to go and pay somebody to do, certainly, because like you said, Leslie, like keeping those expenses down is really kind of key for a lot of people in order to live within their means and to live within, what they can afford. And now the couple you referred to earlier, with the whole do we buy a rug versus do we buy a computer, I've seen that several times, and it really comes down to having those discussions and outlining what the goals are. I know in my budget personally, we have a home improvements category, and we both get a say as what count, what home improvement we're going to potentially, do for that month. Now, if something is a very personal expense, I have a separate way that I work with, clients to help them deal with that, which I think we'll cover a little bit later. But if it's a mutual expense, you've got to discuss that. You've got to be on the same page, and you have to be open to what your partner is expressing.
Well, and I think that couples can take this splitting money, you know, splitting bills and stuff, because I've had couples say, well, okay, I'll pay the electric bill and you pay the gas bill. And all, you know, and this bill will come. And I'm going, oh my gosh, talk about, for me, just talk about minutia and, oh my gosh, how can we make this much more difficult? And then I'm wondering, it's like, well, okay, do you buy two heads of lettuce? I mean, you know, where does this stop? And I mean, and then to me, that just goes into, okay, now are we into heat and air conditioning wars because I'm paying the utility bills, so I'm, you know, we have to set the temperature down at 60 degrees in the wintertime because I don't want to pay the gas bill. So I mean, can you see it take? I mean, have you seen it go this far? This is, you know, I think I'm probably being a little bit silly, but I'm wondering,
I mean,
it can definitely grow.
Yeah, I mean, it can definitely go far. I mean, personally, I haven't seen it, but I guess those same people aren't necessarily the ones seeking out financial coaching. So I have not experienced it to that degree yet, but I've heard of couples that have that kind of struggle, certainly.
Or because I don't make as much money. I mean, there was a piece on NPR yesterday morning where it was, you know, the couple was splitting money down the middle, and she would run out of money before the end of the month, and then she would have to go ask her husband, you know, can I have some money? And that kind of changed this to be a parent-child relationship. You know, it's like, Daddy, can I have some, you know, can I have my allowance, please? Which, again, puts a whole strain on the marriage. So my question for you is, what's the best step? I know you've talked about sitting down and talking about money and finances with your partner, but what's the best way for a couple to get a handle on their finances and make a good plan?
I mean, and that's really what it boils down to, is scheduling that time to sit down together, take a look at your finances, look at all your debts, look at your savings, look at your income, your expenses, your spending habits. Taking that time, you know, to fill out a monthly budget worksheet. They're available online everywhere. You can find a million different types to, you know, fit your style and what it is you're looking for. You know, take a second to map out your previous month's income and expenses and see where the money went. So many times people don't know where the money went. And then setting some goals together, you know, whether those goals are to increase income, to increase savings, maybe for emergencies or a future home purchase or even a family vacation. And then also some debts potentially on debt reduction, or goals, sorry, for debt reduction. And then when you get to that point, if you feel like you're still not making headway or able to communicate, then it comes a time where you've got to reach out for help. Maybe that's
additional
knowledge.
And there's a lot
knowledge.
Of help out there.
Absolutely. There's some great books out there. Personally, I recommend Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey or All Your Worth by Elizabeth Warren. Those are the two that the styles are very different, and they both resonate with me, and I use them heavily within my coaching. There are classes that you can take. There's Financial Peace University. But if a classroom setting doesn't work for you, then there's always one-on-one financial coaching, which is what I spend my time doing and helping couples with. And then if you find that it's more behavioral, then you may need to do some marriage coaching or some life coaching and behavior coaching.
Right. And so do you – I mean, I actually – you know, when I talk with my couples, I'm a proponent, because my husband and I have always joined our money. You know, we've had one discussion about your money versus my money, and it was like, yeah, we don't play that game. And you know, and so that's worked for us. But my sister and her husband have kept their money. They keep their money separate, but they have a joint account. And then the third way that I know that I talk with people about is that, you know, for most of you join most of it, but then you each have a certain amount of money a month to do with no questions asked. You know, it's like if I want to go to Starbucks every day, or if I want to get my nails done, or if my husband, you know, wants to, you know, do something that he likes to do, you know, then we don't ask each other. So what do you recommend as the best way for couples to pool or not to pool their money, as the case may be?
My preference and what has worked well for my coaching clients is that third option, that allowance kind of scenario where, you know, the money is all comes in centrally, it all goes out, you know, as far as like paying the bills, all goes out, you know, centrally, but that you do maintain an amount that is equal for each person each month. You can call it an allowance, you can call it pocket money, you can call it whatever you want. But then each individual is free to use that money how they wish. So this, when I do my coaching with clients, it's generally not a large amount of money because most of your needs, or all of your needs, are going to be accomplished through the rest of the budget. And anything that's, you know, mutually benefiting you is going to be accomplished through the rest of the budget. So it really is just that catch for things that are extra. So, for example, in my relationship, the way I tend to use my allowance is when I want to go out to eat for lunch. So I always have the option to, you know, pack a lunch, to take leftovers, you know, that kind of money is in the budget, is in the food budget, the grocery budget. But when it comes to eating out without my spouse there, then that comes from my personal allowance.
That sounds fair.
Right. And then there's things, too, like we have a joint clothing allowance category, but I buy a lot more clothes than my partner does. So I will account for half of the clothing allowance, but then half of the clothing budget category, but anything above that I want to spend, I take out of my personal allowance.
So it sounds like, you know, we've said this, and it sounds like anything else in a relationship, really talking about it and being honest, because we didn't even get into the whole category of financial infidelity, which would be a topic for another day. You know, it's about not hiding either money or purchases from your partner, because that's a disaster waiting to happen. But you know, it's like anything else. It's working together, sitting down, forming a goal, and working towards that. And I'm assuming that, you know, because I know you, that you're going to suggest to people that if they find it's not working, sit down and readjust it. I mean, and that's kind of what my husband and I have done every time. You know, he's gotten a new job or he's gotten a raise or whatever, we actually sit down and talk about, okay, where is the money now going to go? You know, we reevaluate. So I'm assuming that's something you recommend.
Absolutely. We reevaluate every month. So even if the income is exactly the same, our needs are going to be different depending on what it is we're looking to do that month or what current goal we're working towards and what our progress is towards that goal. So while there are many budget categories that won't change from month to month, for example, our gas is going to be generally the same unless we're taking a big vacation. Our groceries are going to be generally the same except for during holiday time. I usually up them during the holiday time. But for the most part, those are going to be fairly consistent. But then there are plenty of other categories. For example, clothes. I don't buy clothes all the time. I actually buy them pretty rarely. So that category can kind of, you know, grow up and accumulate. So there may be some months when we don't contribute anything extra to that category because there's already enough still sitting there from
already
the previous
full.
Month. Right. Exactly.
So, Elizabeth, this has been really great advice, and I know that people can be weird about talking about money with strangers, but I actually think that sometimes getting that outside perspective can help ease the emotional tension in a couple. So where could people find you and actually find some, you know, get the names of the books and all the stuff that you've recommended? Where can they find you?
Well, my website is www.findyourzeros.com. You can also call me. The phone number is 919-578-2929. And I love being able to talk to couples, to have some time to talk on the phone so you can get to know me a little bit better and I can get to know what your situation is. And I'm even going to offer for anyone who is listening to this show, I'm going to offer them as a gift, one of my strategy sessions. So we will sit down and actually look at the numbers. And I will help you and your spouse come up with a plan of attack. Now, whether that be savings or debt or whatever it is, it's going to be revolving around what your goals are as a couple. And with that plan, you'll be able to then go and either implement that yourself, or you can opt to work with me as a couple and as a coach in order to let me guide you through that plan. So that's going to be the best way for us to work together and really, really work and see what we can do and what we can accomplish together.
And that's really terrific. And, you know, money is necessary. We cannot live without it. It's the way in which we put a roof over our head and food on the table. But as you guys have heard today, money is a lot more than just the dollars and cents. And there are ways to get a handle on what money means to you, to learn and be open to what money means to your partner. And so, you know, it's not something that we have to fight about. It's not something that has to create a lot of tension in your relationship. But here's the deal, guys. You've got to be willing to step up and really take your money, take your finances, and you be in control of them, and don't let them be in control of you, and don't let them hurt your relationship. Because, you know, life's too short, guys, and there's a lot of better ways to spend your time. I tell you, spend your time loving. Don't spend your time fighting. So keep listening and keep learning about ways that you guys can improve your relationship. And until next week, stay loving.